It's Black and Abdallah. Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Boom, 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 boom.
All right, we've made it. This week we get baseball. Thursday, the opener for Major League Baseball, opening day, part two. Right, the first one didn't take, so we're going with it on Thursday. You can hear the game right here on ESPN Radio, ESPN 1000, Thursday night, the Yankees, the Nationals. That'll be the opener, and then on Friday we get the White Sox and the Cubs. Both play on Friday, and Major League Baseball is back. They play tonight. Both teams in town.
Yeah, they
play
do.
Tonight on ESPN Television, an exhibition matchup. The Cubs and the White Sox on ESPN Television at 7 o'clock. I'm Chris Bleck with Adam Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app, talking baseball with you. And when we look at these two teams, 60 games for this season have changed a lot of things, not only as the ramp up to the season, but also how this season's actually going to play out. If you're a Cubs fan, if you're a White Sox fan, and you look at these two teams heading into a 60-game season, how do you feel about it? I feel that both teams, this is going to benefit both teams to some degree. Now, how much it benefits each team, I think, could be a little different based on what we look at. The young players on the White Sox side, can they start things off in the first week and a half, smashing the baseball throughout that lineup, and you get some good pitching? Can Giolito, Cease, Keuchel all come together and give you a solid rotation and be able to get off to a hot start? Because the moment you hit that hot start, I think it's going to be like a wildfire with the Chicago White Sox, and they have the opportunity to make the playoffs. And the Chicago Cubs, on the other side of town, I think the veteran leaders have done this before. We've seen the Cubs for 2 months turn it on. We've seen them do this. We've seen Rizzo. We've seen Bryant, Baez, Lester, Hendricks, Yu Darvish at times be able to turn it on. And I think the veteran leadership of the Cubs really lead in my thought process as far as a team that this 60-game schedule benefits most, because they can just turn it on from the get-go. We've seen Javi Baez in a playoff series, a pressure-packed situation, give us his best. We've seen that from the Cubs before. We've seen it from Kyle Hendricks. We've seen it from John Lester. And so when I look at these two teams and I ask the question, what does 60 games, which team does it benefit more? I think it's an interesting conversation to have now that baseball is finally here. We will have baseball, the opener, on Thursday.
I think it benefits the Cubs more because of their experience, because of their pitching staff, even without Jose Quintana. He did some work starting this week, you know, coming back from that cut on his thumb. I just think it benefits them more because they're proven, you know. Like, you mentioned all the names. If I just put those names out there, but they have struggled at times offensively. They've gone through their stretches. Yeah, they've been hot at times. They've been extremely cold at times too. But I think, you know, starting in the middle of the summer, I think that's going to help them. I think that their pitching staff is experienced. I think that John Lester is going to have another good season. Kyle Hendricks is great. Yu Darvish had a great second half to the season last year. So hopefully he can capitalize on that. I think that there's something to be said for the White Sox being that young, fun team that really doesn't have any pressure on them to win this year. There's a lot of pressure on the Cubs to win this year. This could be the last season on the team for a few guys if they get moved. If the Cubs move on from Chris Bryant, if the Cubs move on from Javi Baez, if they have to choose between the two of them, you know, you're seeing the last couple seasons here of John Lester. You know, Yu Darvish was great last season, but can he maintain that greatness? There are still a lot of question marks. They also have the most pressure because you only have one more year of Theo Epstein being here. Like, this window, this championship window where you won a championship and you had some success in the playoffs is closing. The window for the White Sox is just opening. If they don't make the playoffs, everybody's going to be like, okay, next year. Like, they looked good. They competed. Next year. Next year's the year.
There's less pressure.
There's a ton less pressure on the White Sox because they're young and they're just starting their window. Their window is just opening. For the Cubs, this is the last dance. This could be the last dance for a few people on that Cubs team.
But they have David Ross, who was there with them winning. He's the one that knows that group, right?
Well, did they get rid of Joe Maddon too prematurely? That's another added pressure point for the Cubs.
Right. What was the conversation? They needed someone to kick them in the butt.
Okay.
Right. Grandpa Rossi, when he was there, he held players accountable. Right? Like, because Madden had had Club Madden. Everyone just show up. You don't have to do, you know, everything's loosey-goosey. Take care of it on your own, which, I, by the way,
is this?
Hey, listen, that's the right way to do things in today's age, right? Like, Madden's running things like he's running an, he's managing an office for Google.
Is Club Madden where you walk in and they hand you water with, like, cucumber in
it?
Yes.
And your desk has a bouncy ball that you sit on.
I don't like
that. And you can bring your laundry with you to your desk, and someone comes and does your laundry throughout the day. That's real.
Oh,
that's a thing.
It's Taco Tuesday.
Yes. Your dog can
Tuesday
come with you.
The
whole
calf.
Thing. Madden's, listen, that's the right way to do things. It's not his fault that some of the players couldn't hold themselves accountable.
Advantage of it.
But now, David Ross, the general, he's there. He's going to kick them in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
So it all goes into the conversation. Over the course of the last month, we talked to a lot of baseball voices about this very topic. Zahadev Sharma from The Athletic, he's fantastic on baseball. June 22nd, we got a chance to talk with him, and we asked him the question, which team is better equipped for the 60-game schedule, the Cubs or the White Sox?
That's not an easy one to answer because you can just say, you know, baseball is a random sport in general, right? Small sample sizes, weird things can happen. I think if we're just talking about, let's look at a shorter season, the makeup of the teams, I would say it may benefit the Cubs in the sense that they have a veteran pitching staff and a longer season could drain on them. I also think there could be a counter to that in the sense that it's an older pitching staff. Are they going to be properly ramped up? And then I could go back and forth debating myself on this by saying, well, these are veterans who know how to ramp themselves up. They're probably smart enough that they've already started a week or two ago, kind of had an idea that around the end of June, beginning of July, they'd be starting their camps. So hopefully a guy like John Lester, I mean, we've seen video of Yu Darvish already working and, you know, making up new pitches, doing all sorts of stuff. So I think really Lester is the type of guy that you want to make sure that, you know, he's healthy, he's ready to go. Those types of veteran pitchers that are kind of in the, you know, downside of their careers, you don't want them to immediately come out and have a shoulder barking or I've heard that I believe in 95 when they had the shortened spring, there were a lot of lower body injuries, a lot of muscle injuries. So we may just see that. Maybe that's just going to happen and there's no way to really avoid that. But I have heard that the Cubs strength and conditioning, they have a whole new, you know, people in charge of strength and conditioning, and they're looking, and they were researching months ago on how to kind of combat that. If you have a shorter spring training, are there ways to train now to kind of combat the issues that may pop up because of that shorter spring training?
That's Zahadev Sharma from The Athletic talking Cubs and White Sox with us here on ESPN 1000. By the way, if you're watching this show on Twitch, you can find the channel ESPN 1000 Chicago. Shout out to the great Hambino.
Sorry, man.
Hey, man, we'll get through this together.
Yeah, we've all been there.
Yes, yeah. I mean,
if you want to jump in on the Twitch and see what he said,
Twitch
we've
chat,
all been there.
It's there. So, hey, man, we're thinking of you.
I was there yesterday morning.
Were you? It's a bad Friday night. A lot of beer Friday night.
I don't know if it was beer. I think it was the tacos that I had, or maybe the tequila.
It's a rough combination.
The lots of tequila
the next day
throughout the day.
All right, so shout out to the great Hambino on the Twitch chat. Buster only back at the start of July in this month, July 1st, got a chance to talk with him on Cap and Company, and I asked the question, are the Cubs or the White Sox better equipped for this 60 game schedule? Here's Buster only from ESPN.
And I think the context for the respective teams is really important. You know, the National League Central is highly competitive, and on the other hand, if you're the White Sox, is a third of your games are against the Tigers and the Kansas City Royals. That would seem to be a real advantage, which is why I think in a 60-game schedule, I look at the White Sox as being more dangerous because of the nature of their division. A big question, I think, is going to be about the Cubs, even if they played 162 games, okay, what's the nature, the quality of their starting pitching? That's going to be underscored with this sporadic training schedule that we've had this year with a starting pitchers got ramped up into mid-March, and then they close it down. I've heard from managers that they think that the starters, as they return, are going to be somewhere in the range of 45 to 60 pitches. That's going to be a challenge for a rotation that's older.
So that's Buster only on Cap and Company from July 1st. July 2nd, got a chance to talk with Jeff Passan on Cap and Company. Same question, which team do you favor, 60 games, the Cubs or the White Sox?
I think it probably, if I'm going to pick between the two of them, favors the Cubs. And I don't think by a lot. I think they're actually going to be pretty similar this year in terms of success. But I also look at the number of young players that the Sox have and the expectations that they have. And I don't always trust the ability of young teams to step up in the moment. I almost feel like they have to, you know, wear it a little bit before they understand what winning looks like. I mean, real winning. Like, being over 500, which is well within the realm of possibility with the Sox, is all well and good. But being a championship-caliber team, I mean, I think we saw this with the Cubs, right? You know, they stepped up. They were good. Then they got great. And I think the White Sox, especially with this very weird season that we've got right now, there's going to be a lot of guys, I worry, who press. And I understand the pressing. It's because every game is worth about three times as much as it typically is. It's because a five-game losing streak is equivalent to like a 14-game losing streak in a regular season. When you look at it that way, baseball is suddenly going to look a lot more like the NFL than it does baseball, where if you lose three games to start the season, your season is more or less done. Like, you can recover from it, but it's going to take an enormous effort to do so. And I think we're going to get that urgency for the first time in baseball, and it's going to be very interesting to see what it does to people on a daily basis, because unlike the NFL, you don't have a week between games to figure things out. You're back out there the next day. And in baseball, if you have lost your swing, if your command is off as a pitcher, that's something that takes time to recover. And whereas in a normal season, you have a month to figure it out. A month is half the season now in baseball. And that is, you know, that really squeezes, puts a vice on some of these players.
So that's Jeff Passan from ESPN. Jeff Passan, Buster Olney, Zahat of Sharma from The Athletic, all on various shows that we've hosted over the course of the last month, looking ahead at the Cubs and the White Sox in this 60-game season.
Yeah, and I think that Jeff Passan brings up a good point. Like, if you go, you know, if you start the season 3-7, 3-8, something like that, it's going to be very hard to rebound. That's a huge amount of the season where you need to make sure you come out starting hot. So I think that either team on the north or south side that starts the hottest obviously is going to put themselves in the best position. But at the same time, the Sox have the less competitive division than the Cubs do. The Cubs come out. Let's say the Cubs come out and sweep the Brewers. That puts them in great position.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because you're not only, you know, you put yourself ahead of the eight ball, you put them behind the eight ball, but you need to start hot because it's such a short season and because you have to worry about injuries creeping up later on in the season.
And this is where, if you're a Cub fan and you look at the way the rotation is set up, I would get concerned over extended periods of poor pitching from the starters named Chatwood and Mills, or whoever they slot in as the fifth starter, and using up the bullpen. So then it relies on Hendricks, Darvish, and Lester to be almost perfect.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you run into a spot where the fourth, fifth day, okay, you get your brains beaten in because Chatwood's out after two-thirds of an inning. We've seen that before from him. And then, okay, here comes a bullpen day with Mills on the mound. Okay, then Hendricks, not really there today. Okay, here's Darvish. It's in his head. What's going on? All of a sudden, like you said, and like Jeff Passan said, one bad start, two bad starts, then turns into a trend of this 1 week, maybe the end of the season type of thing.
Well, that's why I'm not sure what David Ross is going to be like as a manager, right? But I feel like Joe Maddon might have been better equipped for this, for that, hey, it was a bad game, forget about it, move on, next game, next mentality, next thing, right? Whereas if you've got that hard ass who is going to hold everybody accountable, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but ultimately, Joe Maddon was good for that clubhouse because he was like, hey, it was just a game, don't let it worry, we'll get him tomorrow, all that kind of stuff, where David Ross might let that pile up. I may be wrong, I'm just saying that from the experience that I saw from Joe Maddon, Joe Maddon might be equipped for the, better equipped for this weird season.
Coming up next, we hear from Coach O, Coach Ogeron from LSU on whether or not there will be college football this fall.
Damn right.
And right now,
playing ball.
There are rumors about a major matchup in college football. There are teams that are not going to be playing because the conferences are only going to play within their own conference.
Mm-hmm.
But there are rumors of a team in South Bend possibly playing a major power to start the season. We'll talk about it next.
Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
Notre Dame at the moment has 8 games on their schedule for college football this fall. They're scrambling, really, to try and figure out. You know, if you look at other teams in the SEC, Alabama has 11 games on their schedule at the moment. The only game on Alabama's schedule that's canceled is against USC. Notre Dame is trying to figure it out. In a moment, we will talk about a rumored game that might be on the schedule coming up this fall. But Coach O, Ogeron from LSU. Will we have football this fall? Let's go to Coach O yesterday on Marty and McGee on ESPN Radio.
We're ready to play. There's no uncertainty here, I tell you that. We're focusing on having a great season, the task in hand. We understand that there's some stuff going on out there where what time the season's going to start, who we're going to play, when we're going to play. That doesn't matter to us. We focus in on working hard in the weight room, getting in great shape, leadership, promoting a great culture here. I'm fired up about what's going on at LSU.
Coach O, also his players are preparing that they will play football in the fall.
Obviously, this is not my decision, but my gut feeling is we're going to play. We're preparing to play. I don't want my players to think any other way. Our coaches are thinking another way. Whether we start September 5th or a little bit later, I don't know that for sure. Whether we play in conference, out of conference, whatever that happens, that doesn't bother me. I know this. I do believe we're going to play. I'm almost certain that we are going to play. And you guys will agree with this. The SEC needs football. State of Louisiana needs football. Our country needs football. It's time to get going.
Yes, Coach. Oh, it's time to get going. We need football. How about Coach O?
We got some things going on. You don't worry about that. You don't worry about them things.
Mask up.
Wear a mask.
Mask up.
Wear a mask. Wash your hands. Use hand sanitizer. Register to vote.
But let's play football.
We're going to play, though. Don't you worry about it.
So there's the head football coach for the national champion LSU Tigers.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way that I think a football team can approach this at the moment is preparing as if it will take place.
Yeah, because what are you going to do? Because the season is supposed to start in like a month and a half. You can't just be like, hey, guys, we're going to play and then start to get ready. You know, these college football teams have been practicing. You know, sometimes you hear of a school like Ohio State had to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
But then they opened back up and they started practicing again after people were quarantined. And then they started practicing again. You know, you hear schools like Oklahoma having no positive tests, Notre Dame having a few positive tests, but still carrying on and having people quarantined. So there are ways to practice and to have this done safely. Now, what matters is, are kids coming back to school? Can you travel? Should you be traveling? Should you be going to, you know, like the Big Ten said, they're only going to have a Big Ten schedule. Should Illinois be going to Rutgers? You know, like that's going to New York, you know,
right.
Like, yeah, you can have non-conference play, but that's supposed to regionalize your travel. But for the Big Ten, it doesn't.
Well, it's the Big Ten, it's the Pac-12,
yep.
The Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the SEC and the ACC, the ACC to an extent, not really. Because
not really.
So it's really the SEC is the only conference where if you say you limit the travel by playing in your conference, you're not traveling to a different part of the country. The ACC goes up to the northern part of the eastern seaboard.
Mm-hmm.
In the Pac-12, you're going from Seattle all the way down to Arizona and anywhere in between on the West Coast. The Big Ten, like you said, going to the East, all the way to Rutgers. You see it with the Big 12. West Virginia is on the East Coast.
Yeah.
You know, even though you don't think of West Virginia as a Eastern state, I guess you think of it as its own entity, right? Like, it's fascinating that playing within the conferences, I don't know how much travel that's really going to limit outside of the few games that had like Big Ten schools going out west to take on Washington, to take on Oregon. You know, outside of that, some of the matchups were meeting at neutral locations that were equal distance from both partners meeting there.
Yeah, well, and that's why I said when the conversation started about teams going to conference only, I understand that Notre Dame is in the ACC, and I understand that for the rest of their sports, they are in the ACC, and they, for the most part, in their college football, play ACC games.
I mean, they have six games against ACC teams.
So fill up the other six or five with big... You have three Big Ten schools in your state. You have Illinois, you have Indiana, you have Purdue, you can play... Illinois, you could play with, if you want to go up to Wisconsin, you could play Michigan State.
They would be the third school. You're putting Ball State into the Big Ten?
You could play Ball State. No, I meant to say two teams.
Mistake,
you know
Indiana.
What I meant. Yeah, I misspoke. You know what I mean.
There's people out there on social media that need to tweet you to tell you that you were wrong. That's what this is. The people can put on their masks. Well, actually, Abdallah, there's only two teams
in the state of Indiana. Yeah, you know what I meant.
Nothing's better than those people.
I hate those people.
Remember when those people used to call the phones and that it would be like a nonstop? They would call to say, hey, now
they have Twitter.
Right, exactly. Okay, so I get what you're saying. I don't agree whatsoever. I think you filled it up with the other ACC schools.
I'm just concerned with the travel aspect of it. That's me. I'm concerned with Big Ten schools going out to Rutgers. I think the more you can limit the travel, the better for these kids and so you don't have an interruption. College football teams have the biggest traveling parties of any sport. They have more kids than an NFL team. They have more staff. They have all these people. Limit the travel, and you can try to have a successful season.
Here's Trevor Maddich on Dari and Mel yesterday on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Trevor Maddich, will there be college football in the spring and not in the fall?
I don't like playing the season in the spring. I think whatever happens, they need to do it in the fall and just eat it. To start with, why is the spring going to be any different? I mean, really, why is any future year going to be any different? If you decide that the current nature of the virus is such that we can't play football now, and if we don't get an effective vaccine, which we don't have really for the flu now, or really for any other coronavirus as far as I know, then what about 2021? Do you cancel it? What about 2022? And I think part of the problem with the spring is that you interfere with, for example, with the draft. What if you're halfway through the season, the NFL has a draft, and you're one of the top teams, and you get 8 or 10 or 11 guys drafted, which typically happens? Do they stop playing, and then what happens? I mean, there's all kinds of issues that are problematic playing in the spring. Whatever happens, they should eat it in the fall and let 2021 be what it's going to be.
So that's Trevor Maddich about football in the fall for college football. Earlier this week, I believe it was on Thursday, the CEO of the Chick-fil-A College Football Kickoff Classic that takes place at the Peach Bowl in Atlanta. The game was supposed to take place between Alabama and USC.
Mm-hmm.
That game was going to take place, and the game was canceled, right? So as we move forward with this contest, the CEO of the Chick-fil-A Kickoff Classic made some news at the end of this week because he suggested on an ESPN radio show in Alabama that there's the possibility that the Crimson Tide, Alabama, who has now canceled that game with USC to open up the season.
Well, USC canceled the game.
And Notre Dame, who at the moment is scrambling to fill out their schedule because they only have 8 games on the schedule right now. They play Arkansas, Western Michigan, Wake Forest, Pittsburgh, Duke, Clemson, Georgia Tech, and Louisville. The games they've canceled against Navy, Wisconsin, Stanford, and USC.
Oh, man, they canceled all the hard ones.
So Notre Dame has 4 games off the schedule. Except they need to find replacements.
Yeah.
The CEO of the Kickoff Classic suggested on a radio show, a local radio show, that possibly one of the solutions would be pairing up Alabama and Notre Dame for that game for the kickoff classic. It would give Notre Dame an additional game. Then they only have to find two or three more opponents. And it would then allow Alabama to play in their kickoff classic, which they wanted to do to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Alabama AD came out and spoke yesterday, suggesting that, yes, we look forward to the home-and-home series that we will play against Notre Dame in the future,
mm-hmm.
but it's not happening this year.
I don't think it's going to happen because I think that the SEC is going to eventually do the same. I think all of college football is going to eventually do this. I think that, you know, that ADs are just kind of buying time until they absolutely have to make this decision because there's a lot of money involved. Like, there's a lot of money involved in that game. There's a lot of money involved when you cancel these schools. And if you read some of the articles that are coming out, lawsuits could be at hand because when you agree to play a team, one of these directional schools, the Citadel, whatever, you pay them to come in and take their beating.
The well, actually, people are going to want to know, what directional school is the Citadel?
That's why I said the directional schools and the Citadel.
Okay,
need to open up their ears today, okay?
I'm just making sure that we're covering
everything. It's because people always come at Alabama for playing the Citadel. I'm like, well, you guys play a bunch of cupcakes, too. My point is
Alabama
this.
Alabama does not have the Citadel
on their
schedule.
This year, they actually don't have
the
Citadel.
They do have UT Martin.
Okay, UT Martin is going to get
Georgia State.
UT Martin and Georgia State get a couple million to come in and take their beating.
Yeah.
Okay? Now they're not. Those are contracts. And I've been reading articles that say,
but they're still on the schedule. The game is still scheduled.
As of right now, once Alabama goes to a conference only, those games are going to be eliminated. And then those teams say, well, we had a contract. You canceled on us. We still want that few million dollars. And Alabama's going to be like, what do you mean? And so you're going to have a few court cases about this maybe coming up. So I think that they're trying to find ways to delay this so they can figure that stuff out.
Nothing like Nick Saban. 3 weeks left in the regular season in college football. Loading up the schedule November 14th with UT Martin.
Bring up USC 2020. Yeah,
please find the UT Martin on the SC schedule. Please do so.
Well, you play Cal. That's basically
good defensive team.
Hmm?
Good defensive team.
Well, I can't see your non-conference schedule now because y'all cancel games. Y'all scared of Alabama, you cancel games.
What are you talking about? You have UT Martin.
Yeah.
The second weekend of November.
Mm-hmm. Schedule better.
I agree. The SEC should schedule better.
No,
yes, 100%.
No.
Those
little schools got to eat, man. Those little schools need to eat. Oh, what about when you play New Mexico?
We'll hear from Allen Robinson next.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I'd like you to meet someone who's really special.
It's Black and Abdallah.
A real inspiration.
Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN _ Chicago.
On Wednesday, I got a chance to host with Carmen DeFalco in for Yurko on Carmen and Yurko. And on Wednesday's show, we got a chance to talk with Bears wide receiver Allen Robinson. Really the bright spot of the offense last season. Looking forward to seeing him play this season. Here's that conversation with Allen Robinson, Bears wide receiver. And the conversation started off with Carmen asking the question to Allen, how are you doing physically at the moment?
I'm doing well. You know, it has been a crazy offseason. You know, again, like I said, a little bit early in the offseason, back in the spring, you know, just trying to keep everything as close and as normal to my regular regimen as possible. You know, so I think I've been able to accomplish that, you know, but again, just trying to stay on everything as much as possible.
Have you worked out with Nick Foles?
I did not get a chance to, you know. I had wanted to try to get a chance to, you know, but again, with COVID and everything, traveling and stuff like that, you know, it was a lot to try to get done. And again, I know for him, you know, he just had his child and stuff like that, you know. So again, it was for me and my perspective, you know, it was a lot to try to get accomplished, you know, in a certain time frame.
How much have you worked out with Mitchell Trubisky in this offseason?
I worked out a good amount with him, you know, and I spent the entire spring in Chicago, and that's where he was as well, you know. So we were able to throw a pretty good amount, you know. We threw some of the guys on the team, you know, we had some good sessions.
Well, Alan, what, you know, we were just talking to Peter King, and he said there's still a lot of uncertainty, that he's talking to coaches and people around the league that they're having a hard time even communicating with you guys, with their players, because there's still so much uncertainty. Like, do you have any idea of when you're going to be in the building and when training camp's going to actually start, or is that all that kind of still up in the air?
It's slightly up in the air. I mean, we kind of have a idea, but, you know, at the time, a lot of the subject to change, you know. So, again, I mean, we have our normal standard as far as, you know, being when we would report, which is typically 47 days before the first game, you know, but there is still things that are being proposed and negotiated between the league and the Players Association. So, you know, it still is up in the air as far as a decent amount of things are concerned, you know. So hopefully over the next week and a half or so, we get a little bit of clarity, but there is ongoing discussions constantly with that. So, you know, we're getting updates a few times a week as far as where everything stands.
And so the NFLPA, you guys as a group still have to approve any sort of deal, right? That's not done yet.
Yeah. So typically how it works is, you know, anything that's proposed by the NFLPA or by the NFL has to be agreed upon by both parties, you know. So again, we have the current CBA and everything as far as the guidelines and time frames that would normally, you know, happen. But again, with everything that's going on, you know, there is different proposals on each side, you know, and it is a decent amount of proposals, again, with players' health and a lot of things that will fall under that, you know. So again, I mean, when those things are agreed upon, you know, then I think that we'll hear a concrete date. But I mean, we still kind of have a concrete date because that's what the CBA says, you know, which we're going by as of now. But those things can be subject to change.
Alan, based on all the protocols that are proposed, we've seen the NBA and the MLB start to get back to practice and to prepare for their seasons to either start up or to resume. Do you feel safe with what has been proposed for the NFL to get things up and running?
Honestly, I feel safe with the proposals that are being made by the NFLPA. You know, I think that we've been in constant communication. When I say we, I think players as a whole, you know, have been in constant communication as far as the concerns that we have playing. And that's across the board with us, with guys who may be higher at risk, with guys' families, you know, with people who live with elderly people who have pregnant wives and girlfriends and things like that, you know. So, and also, you know, just to get back to play protocol, you know, the ramp up period, you know, with guys being, with a lot of guys not being able to have organized training, and I mean training on their own, you know, like in 2011, a lot of guys bring up when it was the lockout, you know, injuries ramped up because of the no OTA period and late getting into camp and things like that, you know. And then with this COVID thing around, guys didn't even have the chance to be able to have a lot of organized workouts in the spring with their normal trainers at their normal different facilities, that's team-wise and on their own, you know. So it's a lot of stuff that needs to, you know, again, that needs to take place. But with the things that the NFLPA is proposing, you know, I will feel comfortable.
Alan Robinson's our guest, Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chris Blexen for Yurko. Have you talked to any of your teammates or anybody else you know around the league that's told you they don't feel comfortable playing and they're going to skip a season?
I've talked to some guys who do have that opinion. You know, again, I'm assuming that there will be a opt-out clause. Again, I don't know how that will look or what that will be, but I'm assuming that guys will have that choice, you know, and not have to be fined and not have to serve any a rigorous penalty financially, you know, with them choosing to sit out because of the safety issues that they feel, maybe for themselves and maybe for their family. Because again, I think that is a real thing. You know, I think that what everybody wants to say is, you know, again, I know that the league is taking proper protocols, you know, but again, there are different cases, you know, where there are false negatives and things like that, you know. So if a guy has a false negative and goes back home and gets it to, you know, an elderly family member or somebody who's at high risk, and then, you know, they have a whatever kind of, you know, whatever happens from that, you know, guys don't want to have that, you know, and that's a real thing. I don't think that it seems real to a lot of people until they have experienced that firsthand, maybe with a family member or maybe themselves. You know, again, I mean, for me personally, you know, I've spoken to and I've known a few people to get it, you know, and they have said, you know, it isn't anything to play with, you know. It's a pretty rigorous, you know, virus and disease, you know. So I think that the guys who will choose that, you know, they have the right to, and if that's in the best interest for them and their family, then I think that that's supported by everybody.
Alan, how likely do you think the season starts on September 10th?
That's tough to say. You know, I would hopefully and like to say likely, you know, again, based on the conversations that I've had, you know, so I haven't really heard anything else that would make it unlikely unless something changed as far as from the government, or, you know, if some type of higher voice, you know, comes in and intervenes and shuts it down or something like that. But from my perspective and from what I know and the things that I'm hearing, you know, I do think that that's likely.
Alan, you said you worked out with Mitch a little bit, especially in the spring when you guys were both here. Mentally, how is he considering the change to the quarterback room and the addition of Nick Foles?
He's good. You know, I think that, you know, just our team in general and also with Mitch, you know, I think that even for me, just kind of talking to some of our offensive players and some of my teammates, you know, I think the biggest thing for us, you know, going into camp and going into the season or whatever is, you know, for us that we're competing against ourselves. You know, I think that's where it all starts. You know, for me, you know, Allen Robinson is competing against Allen Robinson to be the best player that he can be. You know, and I think at the end of the day, you know, with me knowing that, you know, I think that I can live with that result. You know, and I think if everyone does that, you know, I think we'll be happy with the results. And I think no matter what happens, I think we can live with the results if everyone's challenging themselves to be the best player that they can be. Because I think that's all what it comes down to. You know, whenever you're in any kind of position battle or competition at all, you know, you can't sit there and continue to look across from you to see what's going on. You know, you got to lock in, hone in, and focus on, you know, what's your task at hand and how you can, you know, figure that out and perform at your highest level.
All right, I want to play something for you, and then I want to get your reaction. We were taken aback by this last week, and LaDainian Tomlinson was a fantastic football player, and he's in the Hall of Fame, but does analyst work now? And he was asked to talk about the Bears' biggest weakness last week, and he dropped this.
For me, guys, it's the wide receiver position. And I know most people, when you think about this question, you might say the quarterback position and Mitchell Trubisky. But, you know, the way I see it, in defense of Mitchell Trubisky, I don't think they did him any justice in what they put around him throughout his career. Now, Allen Robinson has had a bounce-back career from last year. He had over 1,000 yards. So he needs to be a little bit more consistent. But they have to have other guys like Anthony Miller and guys like that to step up. In today's football, you should be able to take advantage of these defenses on the outside. And when I look at guys in his own quarterback class, Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, you think about both of those guys, they came into situations where they had people to throw to. Patrick had a tight end, and Deshaun had a wide receiver in DeAndre Hopkins. So Mitchell has never had that. He has to play better, no question about it. But those wide receivers have to step up and help him.
What do you think about that?
You know, again, I think for myself, you know, as far as a career standpoint, you know, I would say that obviously for me, I know that I have to play better and I want to play better. You know, as far as consistency, as far as putting years together, in that sense, I would agree with that in the sense of years, you know, but I thought last year, you know, from a game-to-game standpoint, I thought I was pretty consistent. You know, I know that I have to take my game to another level, and I want to take my game to another level, you know. But at the same time, you know, again, I mean, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. You know, I know for our receiving room, you know, it is plays that we have to make, and we do have to up our performance. You know, I think that I'll be the first one to say that. You know, but again, for myself personally, you know, I do think, you know, from a year to year standpoint, you know, putting together years, you know, is definitely what I want to do, and I think that I'm gonna do that this year, and that's something that I've thought about. You know, so again, I mean, it's an opinion. You know, I think it does have some relevance in the sense of me just speaking on our receiver room, saying that we can't up our game and that we need to, you know, and I think that's, you know, anybody across the league would say that about their room. So again. But, you know, that's why we play football. You know, we have another year to go out there and prove ourselves and to take our game to another level. So I'm looking forward to that.
Alan, I'll just answer the question. He was wrong. LT was wrong on that. I think you lead the way. Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of, have there been discussions about a new contract with the Chicago Bears? Have they talked to you and your agents? What's the latest with the new contract?
They haven't. You know, again, we haven't heard nothing. You know, and I think just as far as, you know, me and my agent, you know, from the conversation that we had, you know, I mean, we're not necessarily anticipating on hearing anything, you know, at this point, you know. So for us, we're just, again, we're going into camp, you know, preparing ourselves to have a good year, you know. And again, that's kind of all that I can focus on, you know. I mean, if that comes up and if they reach out to my agent, you know, I'm sure they'll for sure have some pretty good discussions and things like that, you know. But again, that hasn't happened yet, and again, maybe it will happen, you know. Again, I can't predict the future, you know, so I don't know if that will happen at all, you know. So, again, for myself, you know, with this being my second time going to a contract year, you know, I know how to mentally prepare myself, and I know how to block all that out. You know, again, for me, is improving and taking my game to another level, you know, helping my team win games. You know, and I say that all the time, but as cliche as that may sound, that's the reality of it. You know, I can't control what goes on in the front office. I can't control my contract situation. I can't control that at all. All I can do is come out and be the best player that I can be and hopefully take this team to the playoffs.
The Madden ratings were released today. Did you check out your rating?
I did check out my rating. I just can't seem to start off in the 90s.
You have, well, what is it? Tell them. I didn't even see. What is it?
It's a 89. You know, when I looked at my attributes, actually the attributes that they gave me, I was surprised that my overall was an 89 because my attributes actually were pretty good. You know, but again, there's some pretty good Madden adjusters out there. I know Chad Johnson being one, and I see him on the sideline typically during some of the primetime games, you know. So I'll definitely be looking forward to getting my Madden rating adjusted. I think I forgot what they had me finish at last year, but, you know, that's just the start. So I'm definitely excited to see how that gets this year.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is Lecky and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
Shout out to the time Rick Ross gave us advice for life.
Follow your heart, man. Whatever it is, if this is what you want to do, just make sure you do it at the highest level possible and stay focused.
That's Rick Ross on the show. Black and Abdallah here with you here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Thank you to Tyler Aki for producing today's show. I mean, what's the problem with Rick Ross?
No plan. Just boss. You know, Rosé being a Viking.
I mean, Rosé just being a Viking. I mean, what's wrong with that? He gave us great advice for life.
Follow your heart, man. Whatever it is, if this is what you want to do, just make sure you do it at the highest level possible and stay focused.
Yeah.
Rosé.
Yeah. The more you know. Huebner and Zander coming up from 10 to noon right here on ESPN 1000. You can find the podcast of today's show on the ESPN Chicago app. Search for Black and Abdallah. You can also get it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, or wherever you find your podcasts. I saw a fantastic movie over the course of the last week. On Hulu, there's a new movie called Palm Springs. Mm-hmm. It's one of those infinite loop situations, Abdallah.
It's like Groundhog Day.
Yeah, basically.
With a twist.
The twist is that there are two individuals going through the same single day over and over again, and they realize that they are both in the same infinite loop.
Yeah.
And the question at the root of the situation really is this. Do you kind of give in to the situation and you just try to make the best of your infinite loop situation, mm-hmm. or you try and use the time that you have continuously using the same day over and over again to try and find your way out of the infinite loop?
Mm-hmm.
Which would you do?
I think it depends on the situation.
So in the day, it's a wedding. They're at a wedding.
Yeah, they're at a wedding in beautiful Palm Springs, California. I think if you're in Groundhog Day, like if you're in the movie Groundhog Day, I'm looking to get out because I don't want to be in Punxsutawney.
Oh, it's snowing too,
right?
It's snowing,
right? Like, yeah. But if I'm in Palm Springs, like at a pool, at a wedding, like when it's not my wedding, like I can have, you know, like you, there's no stress going into that day. You
so
know,
so got, basically you would do what Andy Samberg does in the movie. You would just try and
cool.
hang out.
It'd be kind of cool. Yeah, I would just kind of hang out and figure it out and do weird stuff. And then because the day doesn't end until you, in this movie, the day doesn't end until you fall asleep.
Isn't that like, what takes place in Groundhog Day?
Well, I think he just falls asleep. That we never find out if he's tried to stay up for like multiple days on end.
But he's tried to stay up.
Does he?
Yeah, remember when he's trying to woo the lady in the movie, and then they both fall asleep?
But they end up falling asleep. I don't think there was like in the movie Palm Springs, the girl in it, she tries to like stay up, and then she ends up falling asleep and waking back up in Palm Springs.
Could you ever imagine if this show was an infinite loop situation?
Oh, like a Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely try and get out of that.
Well, yeah, I don't want to do... Not this... I mean...
All right, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.